Welcome to The Art of the Impossible, a podcast that explores how the design and manufacturing industry can leverage technology, processes, and people to make the impossible possible. I'm Asif Mogul, Director of Market and Industry Development at Autodesk, and each week I'll be joined by industry experts to share the challenges they face and what they're doing to overcome them. From smart products, mass customization, digitization, supply chain, and the convergence of once diverse industries, this podcast is for business leaders who are interested in making things happen. You can subscribe by following us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. So welcome to the podcast. Now, at the time of recording, it's pretty hard to turn on the news and not hear something around the topic of artificial intelligence. Now, there's a couple of camps, aren't there? There's the camp that feels it's a great benefit, could be a great benefit to our industry. There's also the opposite camp that fear that if not managed correctly, it could end up in a lot of disruption. So we're not here today to talk about the politics of that. What we're here today to do is talk about how practically could something like AI be applied to the design and manufacturing industry. How do you do it? What are the benefits? What are the risks? What are the things to be aware of? So to help me have that conversation, I'm delighted to introduce today's guest, and that's Lennart Schulenberg, who's the CEO of VisiConsult. So Lennart, warm welcome to the show. One thing that would be really good to just get your perspective on, Lennart, is if you think about the business of VisiConsult generally, how has it changed over the last, say, 5 years? And what were the catalysts of those changes to your business?
Yeah, let me go a couple of years back further even more. So we were founded in 1996, and we started as a software business, supplying OEMs, like machinery automation company, with X-ray inspection software. Over time, we changed to a machinery and automation provider, building our own machines because we realized customers needed turnkey solutions and like end-to-end solutions or support. So in the most recent years, this is starting to change again, and we are becoming more of a software company. So all these topics like artificial intelligence, cloud connectivity, digitization becomes more and more important. And we are starting to fork out more of the hardware work, automation work to specialized companies in that field and focus more on the application and the software aspect around it. So it's a quite interesting journey, starting as a software company, becoming more a hardware company, with software being a side story, and now becoming a software company with heavy focus on the cutting edge technologies like AI again. It's a big transformation in our doing every day.
What was the catalyst for that transformation? Were you responding to industry pressure? Was it an opportunity that someone inside VisiConsult said, I think we should really look at this? What sparked that transformation?
Yeah, I would love to tell you there was a five-year master plan behind that, but as in many many cases, it's driven by necessity, driven by opportunistic opportunities that come out there. But that would give it not full justice. So what we've seen is an increasing demand for these digital tools, and what the development of these digital tools requires a lot of focus, a lot of investment, a lot of very specialized subject matter expertise. And that focus automatically shifted away the focus of the company from the hardware side towards the digital technology side. Also, additionally, as a German company, we are not in a low-wage, low-cost environment. So to stay relevant and on the cutting edge of our market and to justify the higher pricing, let's say compared to an Asian competitor, you need to push the boundaries of what's possible. And that's hard in the hardware space because things are pretty much developed, mature. Of course, you can still have incremental innovations, but nothing to the potential of, let's say, implementing an AI solution to an inspection process that has exponential potential.
Okay, so what I heard you say there was really the spark was like market demands and sort of shifts in the industry, and then your response was, okay, well, we need to do something about this to keep adding value and staying relevant, and I guess sort of separate yourself from the various competitors that are out there. So talk to me about then AI. How did AI come into the conversation? How did that come about? It seems like, hey, let's look at artificial intelligence for our business.
So in our industry, automatic recognition of defects was used since years. So it's called ADR, automated defect recognition, and our company introduced this 26 years ago. So this is really nothing new. That was classic image processing, thresholding, all these classic tools, no AI involved. But over the more recent years, this technology became more and more available through, especially through the development of computing power. So the tools were there for a long time. And this whole hype about AI, this is nothing new. Basically, it comes down to simple mathematics, regression, neural networks. This has been there in the 60s. But there's the enabler technology, the computational power, GPU computation, the new chips that are enabling it and making it affordable to implement it in practical environments. And obviously, this is, well, let me go back. What's the disadvantage of using classic image processing? And that's that you need to parameterize and train and optimize every single use case and invest significant amounts of time to keep it alive and fine-tune it. And what AI brings is more like a universal approach. So you're training a model what you are looking for, not how the part should look like. And then you're looking for deviations, but you're saying, okay, well, how does my defect look like? How does my anomaly look like? So this is kind of like the evolution to the ADR that has been there for 20, 30 years. It's nothing new. And this ultimately is actually the same with many AI applications. There's nothing new and disruptive in the task. It's the tools that change. And AI is a new tool that's providing significant advantage. But we should never forget it's one among many tools. And AI is not the holy grail that should be applied to everything. It's just one tool to use in the right place, and then it will unlock value.
I really like what you just said, that AI is not the Holy Grail, because I often wonder when the term is used, it's just two simple letters, isn't it? But it could mean so much, and it seems to be used almost everywhere for everything. And a lot, the example you gave was a really specific example, and sort of what I'm learning from what you're saying is, look, you had ADR, it was kind of cutting edge at the time. There was an issue you noticed with it in terms of like the sort of setup and training of the tool and the system and the people, but the kind of like a cost of AI, cost of cloud computing, cost of CPU processing power is dropping and dropping and dropping and becoming more accessible, and therefore this seemed to cross a threshold for you to say we should give this a go, and you used it on a very sort of specific case. So I kind of really like the specificness of your example. So what would been the impact of the AI that you've introduced to the company so far?
It's massive. So typical detection rates, we call it probability of detection or TPR, true positive rates, for human beings are between 85% and 95%. And as if just put that in perspective, our customers are looking on safety critical parts. So that means if this turbine blade fails, the plane will fall out of the sky. If that casting fails, a car might crash at 200 kilometers an hour. If a welding line fails, we might have an oil spill in a natural reserve. So it's incredibly critical that these inspections are performed perfectly. And currently, the human process is that you acquire an X-ray image, you look at it, you make a decision, and that decision is it. It goes unchecked. So when you're tired, when you're exhausted, when you're maybe distracted, that might feed into a suboptimal probability of detection. So as I said, humans between 85 and 95%. So there is a miss, a potential miss in there that's taken care through industry regulations and how to deal with that. But our AI solutions bring this up to 98, 99% probability of detection. So it's bringing significant increases in quality, but then ultimately also performance, because a human roughly takes 60 seconds to evaluate one image. The AI takes 0.7 seconds. So it brings savings on the one side, but it also helps to deal with labor shortage. Because, and we can get into that much more later, because this is one of the biggest advantages of AI, that it's taking away the laborious, tedious, time-consuming, in some cases boring, even though that's a judging term, work that's repetitive. And that helps a lot with the labor shortage problems we have, because many people just don't want to do these jobs anymore, looking at X-rays, at X-ray images in the night shift.
I could also, I mean, like a jump from 85 to sort of almost 98, 99%. That's phenomenal. And you talked about some obviously very practical safety benefits, but I can imagine that the reputational benefit for Visy Consult is also positive in terms of, wow, this company is now jumped from 85, 95% to 98, 99%. Your customers, the people that sort of you work with, their view of you must have changed for the positive, right?
Yes, that's definitely the case, but there's also inertia and adoption. And this is it's a highly regulated industry. So people are naturally very cautious and skeptical of new things. And I think this is what we are seeing in the broader context too. This new tool is coming up and everybody's going disarray. The first thing that Europe goes towards is let's regulate it. Let's have an AI act. Let's Italy, let's ban ChatGPT. It's new. Oh my God. So the Chinese, on the other hand, they've sent out letters to the parents of of children being in school and said, "Hey, there's a new tool called ChatGPT. Please make sure your kid is using this, because this will define our work in the future, and we don't want your kid being behind." What does Germany do? We should ban ChatGPT in schools because it's considered cheating. So what we have to look at, and this is maybe a really nice discussion point, how do we make sure we embrace new technologies and don't go on the defenses and only see the risks, but see the potential and then find ways to deal with the risks through smart rules and smart ways of using it?
Wow, there's so much to unpack there. I'm gonna come back to that point because you raise a really good sort of topic here. So it sounds like inside Visy Consult, from what you've told me and from what I know about you already, you're kind of forward-thinking company. And it's the word I wrote down as you were talking that it seems clear that you had this sort of strategy that's been driven from the top of the company right through the rest of the business. Is we're not afraid of embracing technology and looking at new technology, but in reality, how hard or how easy was it to propose this use of AI and kind of get it implemented in the business? Was it an uphill struggle? Was it really easy? Were you pushing on an open door?
Well, internally, I think the value was seen immediately. But then also, you need to look at the business case. So in the first years, with every exponential business model, it's a lot of investment. We hired, in total, we had 25 people, qualified, skilled, certified people that did all the labeling and segmentation work. So providing the ground truth and data input for the AI. That went on for, let's say, 2, 3 years. So we were building a big data stash for a couple of years. At the same time, we had a data scientists team in Germany working on the models, on the frameworks, on the processes. We started over probably 3, 4 times. So there's a huge starting investment that will not generate any cash or revenue or profit anytime soon. But that's then changing rapidly, because with every exponential business model, you can start to deploy it on the whole installed base with very little effort. So it needs the grit and the discipline to stick through that death valley of that new investment. And this is where I see where we did well, because the way we are structured and the way also our management team is incentivized. But if you look at many other, especially incumbent players in the market, their incentive structure, like being incentivized on EBIT or EBITDA, will not allow that investment, because this will not generate immediate return, which might go against, let's say, management targets that are tied to profit and stock performance. So we are looking at an innovator's dilemma here. New technology is coming up, investments are necessary, proceeds are quite far out in the future, and you need to bridge that gap some way. And if you don't, you will be left behind, because it's all about the data that you have and the quality of that data. And to curate that data and generate it takes time. So it's not something you can bridge with throwing more resources or more money at it. You just need the time to build that stash.
And I guess curiously enough, one of the things people talk about in terms of AI is there's the natural concern that it could replace human beings and replace certain roles. And I think you've kind of quite clearly described in the case of highly labor intensive, kind of like low value add jobs in terms of low reward to the human being, that could be true. But I heard you also talk about, well, look, you know what? We had to hire a bunch of new people, like data scientists and a team. So it seems like there's a trade-off that, yes, certainly certain jobs will be impacted, but it seems like certain new jobs will be created. Has that been your experience as well?
Absolutely. So our company is providing automation systems, so robotic inspection solutions, since the beginning. I can tell you, those companies who invested most in robots hired the most people because in general business was good for them. It was maybe different roles than before. So the people that were moving parts, obviously that was done by robots. And then people had to be upcycled, they had to be trained, they had to be educated, and they were put into new jobs. This will happen again, but just this time it will happen significantly more violent and faster with this wave of AI, because it takes quite a lot of money and effort to put in an automated manufacturing line, but it's incredibly simple to automate a single step in the process through an AI. It's fast, it's cheap, it's pay-per-use based, and there's little CapEx investment hurdles. It's drastic. It's absolutely disruptive. And I think we haven't prepared our society and our companies well enough for what's about to come there.
I want to go back to something you said a bit earlier in terms of it seems like there's a culture inside VisiConsult of being open and embracing new technologies. How do you get a whole organization to be open to embracing new technologies? Because I could imagine that in certain companies you might have the leadership that is open, but then the rest of the team is maybe not. In some companies you might have the rest of the workforce that's open, but the leadership is not. It seems like you've got both things in VisiConsult. How do you create that culture? Because it feels like it's more of an attitude of leadership and a culture of the company.
I love that you say that because this is the major. If there's one thing that depend that like predict whether a digitization or an innovation initiative will fail or not, is the culture of the company. It's the change management that goes behind that needs to be spot on. And what we have done, and that's probably not a recipe for a blueprint for everybody, but it works quite well for us, is having a very engineering or technology intensive management team. So there's
Ah,
a
okay.
lot of engineering background on that team, which suits very well being an engineering or technology company. But then it's also in the culture and our DNA. So we have developed over time, we have developed our corporate culture through like a vision, mission, value process that was created bottom up, including all employees. So it actually our vision is making the impossible possible in a sustainable way. This is why cool to be on this podcast. The art of the impossible, that kind of sticks. It's kind of like matches with our vision statement, and this is what we strive out every day. Making the impossible possible for our customers, because what we do is we build a lot of customized solutions. So we listen a lot to the customer. We look at new trends out there, and this is embedded in our DNA and our innovation management systems too. But ultimately, the culture is what matters, and that needs to be instilled from the top. It's always a tone at the top problem. It's always a set living by example thing. And management has to do a good job to instill excitement and make sure this is also managed across the organization through the KPIs and incentives that you provide. How do I promote innovation and risk-taking and being courageous and having a good appetite for risk?
Was that an easy cultural shift to make? And you talked about the leadership of the company is kind of very tech, I guess tech savvy, engineering minded sort of people. So I can imagine that the sort of convincing the people at that level wouldn't have been difficult. But did you face any particular challenges as you kind of made this cultural transformation inside VisiConsult?
Actually, no, because this is where we come from. We always have been that way. We never had been a very conservative, traditional organization. And this is why I think I don't have a blueprint for an organization that's incredibly conservative, and you need to like drag people into that. But all I can say is that a great starting point is with the culture, making sure to promote the right activities, promote the right people with the right background and the right track record, and make sure to celebrate these wins and to make them seen and visual. and also to then tie incentive systems and scorecards according to these new targets, and don't continue to measure with the old KPIs, with the old incentives that have been working maybe 20 years ago. But this world is definitely changing, and most of the old KPIs are just not suitable to measure the performance of an exponential business model, because they are tied to linear pipeline models.
I mean, it sounds like you've already done some amazing, you've achieved some amazing results with your implementation of AI. Without giving away anything obviously commercially sensitive, generally, what's the next step? What's the next step on your digital transformation journey?
So what we have started is to connect systems to the cloud, to look at the IoT cloud connectivity aspects, to take all the data that's generated by our inspection machines and use it for process optimizations. And that goes to like the digital twin aspect of gathering data and getting data out of our value out of that data. So currently our systems are used for a simple pass-fail decision. You have maybe a turbine blade going to the inspection system. It's being inspected. Potentially an AI is doing the evaluation, or a human. It really doesn't matter. And out comes a decision. And with that decision, the part is then scrapped or put to the next production step. But what is not used is all the data you generate about the part. For example, our computer tomography scanners, who are creating perfect 3D reconstructions of that object, provide the ideal digital twin. We know everything about that part. Geometric deviations, internal defects, scratches, whatever your material properties. So that data is now fed back into manufacturing intelligence systems to look at trends, to see, okay, over time, my scrap rate goes up and the defect is coming from the top right corner. Why is that the case? Look at the tool, look at the mold, look at the raw material, and then try to turn some knobs over there in the production process. The next parts go through the system, you see, the defect is shifting from the right to the left. What does that mean? How can I change that? And how can I reduce waste, both for commercial aspects, but also for sustainability purposes? So it's leveraging the data in what in Germany is big, the Industry 4.0 mindset, and using that data to be better at manufacturing.
It sounds like what you're looking to do now is connecting the sort of like individual, I don't even say silos, but individual like buckets of data, and what you're trying to generate insight from it to kind of take the company to the next level. So it's really from data to insight. Would you say that's a fair way to describe it?
Data to information, data to insight. That's exactly it. And I love that you recognize that, because data is useless. And we hear that many times, is that data is the oil of Industry 4.0. A stupid statement, because data by itself doesn't do any good. Data is just garbage. Data is a lot of zeros and ones. But what you need to derive out of that is information, is insight. Because with that insight, you can have actionable steps that you execute, and that brings value to the operator.
So you talked about, you know, what the problem was, why you sort of thought about AI as a kind of a potential way to automate the quality inspection, the benefits you received, you know, where you're going next. So if we jump back into a time machine and went back to the start of your process, and you had to do this all over again, but knowing everything you know now, would you do anything differently? And if so, what would it be and why?
That's a very good question, because all the mistakes that were made, all the errors, all the issues, they added value along the chain. And I think this is also a cultural thing. Many times, you know, mistakes are seen as a big problem. I don't see it that way. The mistakes shouldn't be fatal. The issue shouldn't be absolutely critical. But we need to make mistakes. We need to have failures to be better and to learn. So I wouldn't want to take that experience away for the team as well, because it makes the team grow. So what would we have done different? It's very hard to say. Maybe being less aggressive on the timelines we put out. So we've been very optimistic, very aggressive in the beginning. This put unnecessary pressure on the team. This led to compromises we made at the beginning on architecture and infrastructure decisions that bit us later and led to redoing some things. So with all the enthusiasm, maybe, you know, dialing it back a little bit and saying, hey, okay, let's still take the time we need. But then on the other hand, if you don't do that, the outcome might have been you never get it done and you never get ready at all. So it's hard to say in hindsight whether having that different wouldn't have introduced other issues over the time.
I really like that response in terms of because what I'm hearing you say there, Leonard, is basically probably you wouldn't do anything different because the mistakes were as valuable as as kind of the successes that you had, and well, maybe even being aggressive on the timeline was part of the variables that helps you be successful. If you slow the timeline down, we don't know. Perhaps you wouldn't have been as successful as you are. So embrace your mistakes is kind of the sort of key lesson I'm taking from there. So, a couple of additional questions in terms of let's imagine that we meet at a kind of a conference, and I'm running a design and manufacturing business, and I just happen to say, oh my God, I'm toying with the idea of using AI in my business. What would be the critical pieces of advice you would give me as a business leader to a business leader to help me on my journey?
I would not tell, I would ask a simple question, why? Why do you want to use AI? And this is, I would say, and now we come back to, is this blown out of proportion? Yes, it is. I think all the hype about AI is definitely blown out of proportion, and we are looking at a bubble here. And I'm pretty sure that this bubble will burst. If you look at startup valuations in the AI space, it's going crazy. It's not justified. It's too much. AI is not the holy grail. It's a nice tool and it can do a lot of good, but just doing AI for the sake of doing AI is wrong. So my question would be, first of all, as if, why do you want to use AI? What do you think it will change for you? What value do you want to unlock? What's the underlying problem that you want to solve?
Again, I love the answer because it almost on every single conversation we have like this, people come up, culture comes up, strategy comes up, but it all boils down to it's no point investing in any piece of technology unless you clearly understand the why. And in our experience, this is why we see a lot of transformations that fail because they're led by technology. There's no why, there's no purpose behind it, as sort of Simon Sinek would kind of say. So I think that's a fantastic answer. Okay. In a minute, I'm going to try and summarize what I've learned from our conversation today, Leonard. But the surprise question, which we introduced last time, which MHA knows about, is there a book that you're reading that you would recommend other leaders of design and manufacturing companies kind of have a read of?
Yes, there's definitely a book that I would recommend anybody to read to open their mind about like platform business and new exponential business models. And I think it's called The Platform Economy, but I might get the title wrong now because I've read it like 1.5 years ago, and I might wanna send you the title afterwards. You can put it in the show notes.
Sure.
It's a terrific book about how platform models function, how to move from pipeline business models to platform business models, because this is ultimately what it's about. I wouldn't encourage people to focus too much on AI itself. This is a tool, and you need people that are capable to implement that tool for your company. It's nice. Don't overhype it. It's one tool among many. Then you have IoT, you have cloud connectivity. But what's especially for business leaders, you need to look at your business model. How is your value proposition that you give to your customers? How is your supply, like your value chain structured? How do you provide value to the end customer and to the different stakeholders at the end customer, to the operator, to the manager, to the controller, to the operations guy? This needs to be analyzed in a proper way. And startups do a tremendous job in that field. But classic enterprises like big corporations don't. They think in their waterfall charts, voice of customer processes, very, very stuck. But just looking at the agile approach, building out a value proposition, and then re-questioning the business model. Why do I need to sell a machine? Can't I rent a machine? Can't I subscribe it? Can I use it as a pay-per-use model? And what tools do I need? Cloud connectivity, AI to enable this to happen. And this is why I recommend that book because it questions everything that we, from a traditional manufacturing standpoint, know on how we do business and how we operate.
So it seems like it has parallels with the journey that VisiConsult is making, because you talked about going from a hardware supplier and a vendor to a software vendor. And as your evolution continues, maybe you're transitioning to a platform business as well, right? It just sounds like there could be parallels between what's in that book and the journey you're taking.
Absolutely. So it's definitely I love to read. I'm a big fan to consume knowledge that way. And there's a lot of things that I personally get out of books and apply to our business. It's a great free source of knowledge. And by the way, I've looked it up while we were speaking. So the book is called Modern Monopolies from Alex Morast and Nicholas Johnson. And the subtitle is What It Takes to Dominate the 21st Century Economy. It's a beautiful short book about platform economy.
Okay, I'm sure a lot of people who are listening will be ordering it on whichever device they like to order it on, or even sort of hardback. So this has been a fantastic conversation, Anna. And so I'm now going to try and summarize what I've taken away from the conversation, which is a couple of bullet points. So I think the first thing that really jumps out to me is you need a culture in the company that's open to new technology, risks, and innovation. So that's like one of the sort of recipes for success. If you want to be successful with your digital transformation, it is really around build that culture, be open to new technology, be open to innovation, be open to sort of taking risks. Not an easy thing to do, but it's certainly something that people need to think about. And then I heard you talk about, well, you want to have to identify a why, a problem, and then sort of almost like build a business case to say, if we've got this problem, it's costing us X amount of millions of euros a year. Actually, we could solve it. And then start with a single step. And what I heard you talk about is like, you can take a specific process, like a sort of pass-fail situation, and use things like AI to sort of automate that and sort of start with those single steps, but start quickly. And then I got the sense that you were using that to real then build positive momentum in the company and embrace the mistakes you made as you go. So I think that those are the key things that I've learned from the conversation that we've had today. Would you say that kind of accurately reflects the sort of like your journey in about 60 seconds that I've described it?
Absolutely. Maybe let me add, radically think about customer value. That is tremendously important. It's not about your company, it's about your customer. What drives value for the individual stakeholders? And develop a good process to capture the value in the conception phase, like using a value proposition canvas or a different tool that helps you to structure your business model and to rethink your business model, whether it's the best fit for that market.
Fantastic. Well, Lennart, it's been an absolute pleasure to meet you and sort of talk to you on the podcast today. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Great. And so I hope that, again, as always, I hope you've heard something or maybe several things have sparked a curiosity in your minds that you would want to try yourself in your organization. So again, is digital transformation difficult? It doesn't have to be. If you follow some of the principles that you've heard some of the other leaders talk about on some of the other podcasts, maybe you could be on your digital transformation journey, or you could increase the chances of your success with your digital transformation. So thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.